The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's Thursday, and you know what that means. That means it's time to ignite the dynamite. The day after the dynamite, and welcome to another edition of Day After Dynamite. Solo edition of Day After Dynamite, because I'm here by myself. I'm Will Washington. This one's going to kind of be a little bit of a shorter edition. I'll give you a couple reasons why. One, holiday season. My kids are off. And they're upstairs actually watching Elf right now. And I figure I should give them more of my time. Second reason, you may be asking, why, Will Washington, do you have a coat on and a hood on in your house? That is because it is freaking cold. Been posting about this on Twitter the last couple of days, but we've been anticipating this day here in Denver for quite some time. It is currently, kid you not, actually it's warmer than it's been. It's currently -6 Fahrenheit outside, very cold. And I do this show in my basement. For those that don't know how physics work, heat rises. So it's very, very cold down here. Very cold in my house. And I will say that earlier it was like -12, so it's a little bit better. In my house, I've got the heat cranked. I've got the fireplace going. Can't get it above because I've got like one drafty window upstairs. I put a plastic bag over it to like kind of help with all of that. But I cannot get it above about 69 degrees. Come on. Give me your nices. That's all fine and good. Anyway, so it's cold. I don't want to be in the basement for too long. I've got my coat on to keep me warm. And otherwise, I'm here just to talk about some AEW Dynamite. And I have to say, folks, I liked a lot about last night's edition. Thank you, chat. You're all behind there, but I got all my nices. There was lots of good to talk about. Some not so good, and some really interesting to talk about. First thing I want to get into, because we'll talk about all the news and everything else that went down, is, look, folks, I hate to say I told you so. I'm not one to do so. But, look, I've been singing the praises for years of one Hikaru Shida. As a matter of fact, I'm currently wearing my Halloween Shida shirt. And I believe I've said consistently on this show, on Grapsody, RBR, wherever you've heard me talk about this individual, I have stated that Hikaru Shida has given every one of her opponents their best match. She consistently changes the narrative around her opponents, and it never fails, whether we're talking about Jamie Hayter, or whether we're talking about Penelope Ford, Ty Conti, whoever it is. Jamie Hayter to a lesser extent, because Jamie's been having a phenomenal year. So I was looking forward to this match pretty much from the moment it was announced. And I think the moment that you could kind of start to sense that it was going to be the main event, and before they had even announced it, you could kind of see that AEW was putting a lot behind the match in terms of social media and things along those lines. You kind of got the feeling that, wait, this might actually be going on last. Which is interesting because the last time the AEW Women's World Title main evented Dynamite, if I remember correctly, was Britt Baker versus Thunder Rosa in the steel cage match, which also took place in this same arena, the Freeman Coliseum in San Antonio, Texas. So kind of interesting that women's wrestling just seems to thrive there. But anyway, point being, Hikaru Shida, she gives her opponents their best match. With the role Jamie Hayter's been on, I thought this was going to be something great, and it turns out it was. So hats off to one Miss Hikaru Shida. This, I think, is one of two the Shida action figures I own. This one's actually signed. Matter of fact, this one, I'm just going to allow this one to sit right here. I'll turn it so it's not, like, glaring in the screen. There we go. Shida's going to join me the rest of this show. So, and I see, because King of the North asked, was that before or after Deonna versus Mercedes Martinez? Deonna versus Mercedes Martinez was back in, I want to say May, if I remember correctly. I know that one took place in Baltimore. And so that would have been after, but the reason that it's, well, I said AEW Women's World Title, so that was the reason that still slightly off there. But anyway, I want to make sure we get in our super chats. If you're watching live, please send us your super chats, send us your humper chats as well. Super chats you can send us by going to youtube.com/Fightful, and I'm going to try and read those as we get through the show. And then also, if you go over to humperchats.com, you could send us a humper chat really at any point. Just make sure you're addressing what show it's for. We got quite a few humper chats actually already, and I want to read this one here. Let's make sure we get this one on screen. This one is from Jason R. Jason sent in a $5 humper chat. Says, happy holiday season to all. Really loved last night's Dynamite. Will, are you looking forward to the Dynamite set to be held in your area? I feel like tonight's Dynamite set up a lot of future storylines, and I, for one, enjoyed the Swerve Keith Ross promo. Will you are in the minority there, because that segment definitely did not get a lot of love on social media, and we'll be talking about that here shortly. As far as the Dynamite next week, oh yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it. I'm going to be doing a lot of media stuff around that show, one of which you guys will probably hear about here shortly. Yesterday on List in Your Boy, Sean kind of hinted at what it's going to be, so I'm sure those of you who are in the chat right now and know what that's what I'm talking about there, I'm sure you know what's coming. So that should be exciting, and that'll be officially announced on social media either tomorrow or Saturday. So stay tuned for that. I'm sure the chat already knows what that is, just based on how List and Your Boy went yesterday and a little exchange there. But thank you, Sean, for putting that out there. And so, yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it. My friend, who I've talked about a lot, who has just recently gotten into wrestling as recently as this past September, she's going to be going with us. My kids are going. My wife is going, my in-laws are actually going, a lot of people are going to this show that I know just personally, and then we've got just a lot going down on that show that should be fairly exciting. And really, getting into the news around AEW, it's going to be one of the, if not the last, as it seems, show to have the current look and presentation of AEW Dynamite. It's kind of interesting to think about all of that. So Tony confirmed in a great interview with Scott Fishman yesterday, talked about the changing of the set and stage, that it sounds like there's going to be a change to the stage. He called it really beautiful. I haven't seen anything. You know, I have seen a little bit of the, what do you call those, identifier shots that they shot over full gear. I know some of that was seen on BTE, I saw. Somebody mentioned to me, I haven't seen it, but I know somebody mentioned that they also showed some on Sammy's vlog. I guess it would have been one of the last ones since he's not doing the vlog anymore. And then I saw some stuff that wasn't seen on either. But the gathering I get is that they shot some stuff for the new Dynamite intro and the new that's going to kind of match the presentation of Dynamite, and they shot some stuff for Rampage. You could kind of see that in the BTE intro where they were doing kind of those hallway shots that looked like those were for Rampage, and then the shots with the lighting in the back would have been for Dynamite, I believe. Don't quote me on that. So there's that. And yeah, it looks like there's going to be a little bit of a refresher. It's kind of interesting to think about the fact that Dynamite is still relatively one of the newer shows in wrestling on television, right? It's basically Dynamite and Rampage are the two newest. You've got, you know, Raw that's been around since 1993, SmackDown that's been around since 99, NXT that's in most forms been around since 2010, and then you've got Dynamite from 2019 and Rampage from 2021. But what's crazy about all that is that of those shows, Dynamite has the oldest presentation of any of those shows, and it's one of the newer ones, right? Like Raw got a refresher last year in 2021, and then they've changed theme songs just recently. And SmackDown, kind of same deal. SmackDown had a graphics reset or upgrade about a year ago, and then they changed the theme song. What was that, just like a month and a half ago? NXT, of course, just got a presentation overhaul. Dynamite's had some upgrades to the presentation, of course. They completely changed the graphics set in 2020, November of 2020, right after Full Gear. And then they did a little bit of a refresh of that graphics set back in January when they moved to TBS. They just kind of changed a little bit of the way the animations move. But for the most part, it's been roughly the same throughout, pretty much since the 2020 change. And the theme song has been exactly the same since day one, which, granted, you know, it's Mikey Ruckus. It's his band, No One Hero, that did that theme song. It's great stuff. But it's just interesting to think about the fact that one of the newest shows in professional wrestling has the oldest presentation. And so it's going to be nice to see it get a refresh. I don't know what they're going to end up doing. I'm curious what that's going to be. But I am excited to see how it all shakes out. I always love presentation overhauls. It always kind of feels like just a new breath and new life into whatever show is happening. And then, of course, that, like I said, even with Raw, you know, Raw has had multiple refreshes, but every single time I get excited for them. I remember in 2002 when they debuted the set and dropped kind of that Attitude Era set. I remember just how different and exciting the show felt. It almost felt like I was watching a pay-per-view that first night. SmackDown's had multiple refreshes, and each time it's felt good, especially because I hated the AC/DC run. So either way, I'm excited. Next week in Denver is going to be the last show to have kind of that old presentation. But it is New Year Smash and there's a lot going down. But yeah, I'm going to be doing some media stuff around Denver, but I will be there. So if you're going to be there, come say hi. I'll be on the floor. I can't remember where. I think in Section 6, maybe? Section 6 sounds right. It's the one next to the ramp. So that's where I'll be. And yeah, if you're going to be in the Denver area and you're going to be at that show, come say hi. I know that ticket-wise, it's doing better, as I've mentioned before, than the last show, which I think just barely scratched 3,000 seats. And this one, I think, is up to like 3,700. So it should be good stuff. Let's see. We've got more Super Chats. And thank you again to everybody who sent a Super Chat. Orion Ben 666 says, Will getting his poncho ready for next week, Game 6. Yeah. I mean, look, same deal. My wife, as I mentioned, had blood splattered on her. And given how match 5 ended and the fact that they seem to be hinting at giving us more blood, I imagine that's not for no reason and that we're going to be seeing it in this coming match. So that should be exciting. Zero Prime says Sheeta proved why she was champ for 372 days. Look, the thing about Sheeta was that she, you know, a lot of people associate her with the pandemic, right? And there's a lot of, for the most part, we hear it all the time that she's a pandemic era champion. It was brought up on commentary that she had her reign with no fans around, which is a true statement. But I think bringing that up so much discredits how organically over she got when the fans were around. And that's one thing I never want to take away from what she accomplished, that whether or not the pandemic took place, she was going to be champion. That she really, from the time she came in, I remember she had, you know, obviously she's been with AEW since day one, but she didn't move to the States until October of 2019. And the reason that I bring that up is because she had that first Dynamite match with, I want to say, Shanna. And I think that was on October 30th, 2019. And I remember that because that was the night they crowned the first tag team champions, SCU, when they won the titles. And that also had it was the Halloween episode. So it had all the Rick and Morty stuff. So there's a lot of associations there. But Sheeta had that match, and you could really sense from that match on she was really getting over. And she had the match against Britt Baker, and she beat her clean. And that I'm talking about before she broke her nose, when they were both baby faces. And you could just sense more and more she was getting more and more over. And then they ended up having to do that fatal four-way at the beginning of 2020. And that was, it was Riho defending the title against Sheeta, Nyla Rose, and Britt Baker. And it was really just because Chris Statlander, who was originally supposed to get that match, had a booking. So then Tony booked Riho to defend against the bottom four of the top five at the time, back when they were still doing the rankings. And in that match, of course, you had three baby faces in that match. Britt was a baby face, although Britt was like teetering on a heel turn already. Riho was, of course, the world champion. She was a baby face. And Sheeta was a baby face. And if you go back and watch that match again, you can clearly see as the match started, I think multiple people were over, but by the end of it, people wanted Sheeta to win. And I think that was a testament to how over she was getting. And then on that last night before the pandemic, that show from Salt Lake City, I think it was March 11th, 2020, there was a tag match that night. It was Bea Priestley and Bea Priestley and Nyla Rose versus Hikaru Shida and Chris Statlander. That was where the Holy Sheeta chant was born that night. And it happened organically. It wasn't something that was just printed on a t-shirt. It wasn't something that was told to the fans. It was an organic chant, happened on its own. It blew up, and that became kind of a catchphrase of hers. But I said all that to say that she was getting really, really over with the fans going into that title win. And had the pandemic not happened, I think she would have been an extremely over champion. And she would have been kind of seen as a people's choice kind of champion. But instead, she ended up having her entire reign take place without fans around. And by the time the fans came back, Britt Baker had gotten over. You know the story. So, yeah, I think she did prove why she was champ for 372 days, but I think she also proved why she was kind of the ace to begin with. And I think I'm really glad to see she's one of those names that, after not being champion, you know, there was a lot of worry, especially for me, that she would fall wayside. And I'm really happy to see that getting the match against Jamie Hayter, that she gets to be a top. You know, having a match against Jamie Hayter is one of those things where they treat it as a big deal, treat it as Jamie Hayter is somebody who is picking up steam, gaining momentum, is very over with the fans. But Sheeta is still, to this day, the longest reigning AEW champion ever. Although, we're just like 3 weeks away from Jade Cargill passing that. So, either that'll no longer stand for her, or Jade's on her way to losing. I don't know. Let's see. Tim Gordon says Hayter versus Statlander will tear the house down whenever it happens. It has potential to main event a pay-per-view. Could. And again, that is a case of homegrown names. I know everybody who has known Jamie Hayter for longer will always say, well, she was born in stardom. Yes. But as far as getting known to the wider audience, it's been AEW that did that. And I think she would even consider herself a homegrown name in that regard. I think that could be a big deal. And it's always great to see when those homegrown names get kind of that main event due, in the same way that last week Ricky Starks and MJF did. It's nice. And to see that this week, I think, was a really cool thing. Let's see. What is that? Padraic? Gillespie says, the main event was the matchup I fantasy booked for the Owen finals, and it was everything I thought it would be. Hayter and Sheeta stay winning. I agree. I love all of that. Caden says, I'm sorry for what I did last night, heart. Look, I'm not mad at you, Caden. And for reference for what happened, sometimes, folks, when you're at live shows, remember that your friends sitting at home are on a bit of a delay, and a lot of one at that. And so I'm watching FTR versus the Ass Boys, which I predicted last week the Ass Boys were going to win. And Caden texts me, you did this, Will. And the match wasn't over. And immediately I think, FTR must have lost. And so I'm sitting there waiting for the next bout. It was like 35 seconds. And sure enough, the Austin Gunn gets the roll up on Dax Harwood. And I looked down, I text Caden. I was like, I know you're live in the arena there, but remember that I'm on a bit of a delay. So, like, I'm not seeing what you're seeing just yet. So, that's that. And actually, I've got a guest. Maybe. Do I? Oh. Never mind. I do not. I'm just checking out some other things. Let's see. Let's keep reading the super chats. Let's see. We've got Amandine says, hi, Will. What's your percentage on Sasha? Or what made your percentage on Sasha and AEW go down? Okay, let's talk about percentages, shall we? I was asked today and I tweeted 69%. That's what I said. 69%, and people noticed that that's down from when I gave a percentage last time. Why 69? Two reasons. One, it's because that's how hot it is in my house, so it was a fresh number in my head. But two, 69%. Let's talk about it. Why did it go down? Okay, so my gut feeling is still, yes, it is Sasha. In LA. My gut feeling is, yes, that is where she's headed, is AEW. Still my gut feeling. It's not necessarily even a hope, because I just hope to see Sasha Banks back, and knowing that she's going to be working in Japan, knowing that she's currently in Japan, I'm excited about all that. Why my percentage changed has a little bit to do with the lack of promotion of the match, and the fact that there are potentially in place at this moment in time two potential partners for Saraya in Hikaru Shida and Toni Storm. Now, I think we're bait and switching here. I think that's exactly what we're supposed to think here. I think that's the reason why there's two potential partners, because if she has to pick between those two, wouldn't that be an issue? Because she was standing, all three were standing tall at the end of the show. Why would she pick just one of them? So I do think that some shenanigans are going to go down. So that's why my gut feeling still says we're here. Because I also feel like part of the reason that the match, because I've heard from people, why aren't they promoting the match right now? At this point, if they wanted to build hype, wouldn't they be promoting it more? Yeah, they kind of have been, right? They announced the match 2 weeks ago on Dynamite, and then they did have Saraya also give it a little bit of hype and say that she's going to find a partner. But as far as we're concerned, no match graphic has been made. None of that's been actually promoted. Why is that? And then I thought about it, because my percentage might have been lower thinking about those things. But as far as we know, Sasha's deal with WWE is not up yet. It's not going to be up till January 1st. And so as far as that's concerned, I don't think we're in a place to necessarily be promoting a match on the record, on as in match graphic everything, with somebody who isn't technically available yet. And so, like, all of the stuff with New Japan is all things we know via some great reports out of The Observer, out of PW Insider, things along those lines. But as far as she's concerned, there is nothing promoted as far as Sasha's concerned. As far as anybody knows, she's still Sasha Banks as of today. And until January 1st, it's still Sasha Banks. So I think that I have a feeling we're going to get a little more clarity in the next couple of weeks. As it stands right now, I think that I'm still at about 69%. I'm not willing to comfortably go over that 75% again. And I don't think I will be until January 1st, until I see her straight up removed from the WWE website. Then that's about the point where I'd be willing to go, okay, we're here. So give it a little bit. But for now, sticking with my 69% because it's nice. You know who else is nice?
Will Washington! You're very nice, Will Washington.
Yeah. Am I? Is that what they say?
I think you are.
I just realized I can't hear you, and I know why I can't. It's because I don't have headphones on. Because
you don't need headphones as a solo host, right?
Right. Well, so nice, I haven't needed them. What's up, Jeremy?
Nothing. How are you, buddy?
I'm just doing a podcast by myself.
Why are you by yourself?
What because happened? It's cold and my kids are home. And so I've noted to people this one's going to be kind of a shorter one. And I didn't want to shortchange any guests. So here we
just,
are.
You know, you could have just asked me. I'm available on a drop of the hat, Will Washington, anything for you. So anytime you don't feel like doing a solo podcast, you just message me. I don't take offense to it.
Well, I'll keep that in mind. I don't know. It's obviously I'm here and happy to just answer all the questions that everybody's got, like Abdullah the Butcherhead, who said Jade came out once on Dark while Sheeta was in the ring. I was so excited, but Madison Rayne confronted her. When will she face experienced women? I think there's a little bit of a balance there, right? In that if you keep Jade mostly against kind of the types of opponent she's had, it's easier to keep her undefeated. That at some point, once you start going toward the top of the card with her, and I think that's a place you can go once you get higher up on the streak. But it's kind of like Goldberg, right? Like Goldberg was beating mostly bums. And then once Goldberg was kind of through with the bums, then you started seeing him start taking on more of the people who were more important on the card. I think she's gotten a lot of those important people on the card, but there's obviously a few that you still want to kind of keep her away from. And I think that's not necessarily a bad thing to me anyway.
I mean, she's faced Nyla. She's faced Athena. Willow's not like experienced in the AEW world, but a lot of people know Willow, obviously a big name on the independent scene. So she's faced some like experienced women. I guess if you're looking at it from the AEW perspective of, okay, yeah, when is she going to face like a Sheeta, a Britt Baker, Tony Storm's still kind of in the world title picture, but someone like that, I can understand that argument. But yeah, you got to be one. Some of these women are in the world title picture. Now Athena is in the ROH title picture. And then, like you said, there's gotta be a balance there of you can't have her face these women and then maybe have them win. And so then Jade loses her losing streak, or Jade beats them. And then it's like, okay, where do they go from here? It is a tough balance. And I still think at times they're struggling with that because right now, like that Bow Wow stuff feels dead, and I don't know where they go.
Yeah, where the hell happened with that? I mean, especially because it feels like she's on her way toward Red Velvet, and so
yeah,
unless Red Velvet aligns with Bow Wow, but again, like it does feel dead.
I think they should get a singles match out of Kiera, right? Like they just dropped her, and it's like, oh, let's do a 6-woman tag and. Then that's that. You can't get me a singles match out of Kiera and Jade on like a Rampage or something. Like boost the win streak a little bit. There's a little story there, like a little mini storyline between them. I feel like they should at least capitalize on that a little bit.
Oh, for sure. Wrestle Vibes with Rivenblade says, happy holidays and all the best to you and the fam. Thank you. Thanks for being a refreshing and reasonable voice in this space. Reasonable. Tell that to my wife. Let's see. We've
gotta pull your collar. Yeah, reasonable. Yeah, tell it to the wife.
Nah, she's great. And I see why Rob is here. Thank you. You know what? Hey, everybody. I'm gonna let Rob know the same way I let everybody know, folks. Don't forget that there's a brand new edition of Ask Grapsity happening today at 5 p.m. And 5 p.m. Eastern is the time for brand new edition of Ask Grapsity at 5 p.m., Rob. And so it's going to be me, Reg, and Phil answering your questions. Whatever you've got for us, throw it at us. We'll answer brand new Ask Grapsity. So that's at 5 p.m.
5 p.m. Fightful Select. Everyone sign up.
FightfulSelect.com.
Ask Grapsity. There we go. Oh, no. Okay. It literally, did he put himself? It says, don't put me on screen. Get out of here, Rob Wilkins. Popped on to give a thumbs up. Speaking of thumbs up, everyone gives a thumbs up on this video and subscribe to the channel.
Yeah, it's please. Smooth
professional transition over here.
Yes, I would appreciate that from everybody. We'd all appreciate that here at Fightful. Speaking of Fightful, you know we got the Fightful Awards coming up. Myself and Denise Salcedo and Sean Ross Sapp are going to be hosting that one. It's going to be a blast. If you haven't voted, please get those votes in. Today's category was a big one. We're talking about Female Wrestler of the Year. Up for vote right now. We have two different categories here for Wrestler of the Year, where we've split not just male-female, but also in-ring and overall, because starting to realize those are kind of two different things. Although there's a piece of me that feels like in-ring and overall might, in one category, be won by the same person. Let's find out. That's right, folks. Logan Paul is going to win it all.
But you're talking about the females. Which,
No, I mean that. I think that could end up being the case too. Let's see where we're at. Maybe not. No, I don't think it will be.
I don't feel like in ring and overall because I think in ring, like looking at the list, I feel like in ring might go to somebody like Tam Nakano or Iwatani, but like overall. I haven't checked the voting. I haven't checked the votes. I wouldn't be surprised. But I think overall could end up going to Bianca.
There's again, it's two different categories because I think there's two different things to recognize here in terms of what people have brought in the ring and what they have brought just as an overall presence to professional wrestling this year. Because, it's very much two different things. And we do need to recognize those in-ring performances as well. So get those votes in. It's going to be a really, really fun show. I have been putting it together for the last, I don't know, month in terms of putting the actual show that we do together. I've been producing award shows for the last 18 years. And given the opportunity to do this one, hell yeah, I was going to do this one. So this is going to be my 18th straight award show.
I look forward to it. I assume that I will accept the awards on behalf of everybody. I will just show up and I will collect all the awards for myself and then go door to door and then hand them out. to these people. That this is what Jimmy is paying me for. Mm-hmm. I thought I will accept, and then I'll just go and hand them to these people.
Sure, why not?
Jimmy's just gonna pay to fly me across the country to hand out these awards. Of like, here you go, here's your Fightful award. It'd be very fun.
Let's see, we got another Humper Chat. This one is from, we'll go with Arduit, who said, "For Dad, last night was my first show ever." Like, overall, just like, ever? That's great. Or was it your first AEW show? Regardless, glad you had fun. I said, still riding the high from that. The Hater Shida match was an absolute all-timer. The Trios match was phenomenal. And despite everything, I think the Swerve and Keith Lee ending was solid. Also, the FTR pop is real, OMG. Well, I'm glad that you enjoyed all of that. Again, getting to go to shows, I think, is quite an experience. I did a count. I've been to 19 shows this year, so there is a little piece of me.
I've been to two.
Yeah, I went to 19 in across the board. I went to GCW shows. I went to AEW shows. I went to WWE shows. I've been to a lot of shows this year, and various indies, just little things like that. I keep a running list in my phone of every show I've ever been to. And I also keep note of who I went to the show with. So that way,
are you gonna put this in a book like Chris Jericho? Do you have like star ratings on all the shows that you went to?
No, for me, it's just like I like to see who I've enjoyed wrestling with and like, I don't know, who I've been around the most for all these shows. I think this year, hold on, as I drop my phone. If I look at my phone, I pull up the shows I've been to this year. So I believe it's in my notes app. Yeah, this isn't like a spreadsheet or anything. It's literally just an events I've been to just thing. And going all the way back to the first Raw I ever attended, which was on April 23rd, 2001 at the Pepsi Center. And going on 21 years, or almost 22 years of shows. But let's see, because I believe Phil and Reg are the two people I've attended shows with the most this year. Like between Supercard of Honor and For the Culture, and they're listed here multiple times. I was at the Royal Rumble with Phil. Was at Terminus with Phil. Yeah, I definitely went to a lot of shows with Phil and Reg this year. So
I mean, that definitely makes sense, being with those two. Well, I know you travel often, Will, and go to all of these shows. I think I've been to two. I went to an AIW show, and I went to AEW when, you know, I went to Cleveland. That was Cody and Sammy. Went to mm-hmm. Cody's last match, and then Pittsburgh. I don't remember much of that show. Punk wrestled Dustin. That was the match that I remember that show. I don't think I've been to anything else. It's been a long time. Been spending money on other things. Could not afford to travel.
You got married this year.
That costs a lot of money. Marriage costs, everybody. It's word to the wise. Marriage costs money.
You know what costs you more? Kids.
Yeah. I mean, that's very true as well. Your kids going to have a good Christmas, Will?
Yeah, I think so. So it was one of those things where there's nobody around. All right. So we'll start with the one thing. The next 2.5 minutes are going to expose the secrets behind Santa Claus.
Spoiler alert, everybody. Everyone,
so if you have kids in the vicinity, just like mute. So my son is starting to catch on. My daughter knows. She learned earlier this year, actually. It was one of those, like, should we send her to middle school still believing in Santa? And so we told her, and it was like this big heartbreaking moment. But my son is like kind of starting to catch on. His friends at school are like, they say Santa's not real, but I'm going to put it to the test this year. I'm going to ask for things and not tell my parents. And so we're like, fuck, how do we get around that? So he wrote a letter. So we were like, hey, you got to write a letter to Santa. He's like, you're right. So he wrote a letter, and then we like intercepted it. And he was like asking for some slightly outlandish things that almost like don't exist. And I was like, damn, He's like really trying to like crack this mystery of Santa Claus. So I've had to make some things happen. Because like he's really into Beyblade right now, and so he's like, I want a Beyblade making kit. And like there is no like real Beyblade making kit, but all the parts for various Beyblades do exist. And so I did find all of them and like put them in baggies. And he's, oh yeah, no, I'm gonna keep this mystery alive. Are you kidding me? I'm gonna keep the magic alive this year. I'm gonna do it all, and it's gonna be fun. This is gonna be Christmas, and it's. Other than that, like my daughter's in that transitional period where, like, do you remember being 11 and what you wanted for Christmas that year?
No, I can't remember what I had for breakfast, Will, much less being 11. Kidding me?
Oh. See, I remember all of my Christmases. I could tell you what I got, like, every single year for Christmas. But 11 was, like, a really odd Christmas because I hadn't quite, like, that was a year where I kind of grew out of all the, like, kid stuff I was into, but hadn't quite grown into the teenage stuff I was into. And so, like, I remember the year before I had gotten, like, I think the Christmas I was 10, I got a PlayStation and a Croc, which was, like, a lot of people's first PlayStation game, apparently. And then I remember 98, when I turned 11, it was just a really sad Christmas, and I'll tell you why. I was a really big Family Matters fan, huge Family Matters fan. For those who don't remember, Michelle Thomas, who played Myra, died December 23rd. I didn't find out about that till December 24th and spent all day Christmas sad about the death of Myra all day. That was, I couldn't think about anything else. I'm like, why do I even want gifts? I can't even enjoy any of this. This sucks. And so I was sad about that all day. But also, like, I didn't even really ask for much that year because, I don't know, I wasn't sure what I was, like, into. And I had a Blockbuster card, so, like, I could play any games I wanted. And so I didn't really, like, ask for much that year. But then, like, when I was 12 was, like, the wrestling year. That was the year that I became just obsessed with all things professional wrestling. And the only things I wanted, anytime somebody asked me what I wanted that year, I was, like, something wrestling. Just give me wrestling stuff. And I remember that year I got WWF The Music Volume 4. I got WWF WrestleMania 2000 on Nintendo 64. But then my dad also bought WWF Attitude on Dreamcast. And like one of those games really sucked and the other was WrestleMania 2000.
We're not going to slander WWF Attitude. That game for the time, that wasn't bad.
Well, first off, no, it was. Mainly because like the WCW games were slaughtering it.
Yeah, and I actually hated the Acclaim games with the button combos. Those are horrible.
Oh, so bad. Yeah. And to get both that and WrestleMania 2000, which was just phenomenal at the time.
Yeah.
And like to play those side by side. It's like WrestleMania 2000, I would say, didn't look as good as Attitude and didn't have like the entrances Attitude had. So I would like throw on Attitude, watch the entrances, but like don't play the actual game.
And then camera cut to the 64, and here's the actual match here.
Yeah, and then here's the actual match I wanted to have. Like that was it though. I literally only did Attitude for the creator wrestler, for the entrances, and for all of that. But to play the actual game, nah, I couldn't. That shit was trash. WrestleMania 2000 had all that shit going on. But yeah, I got those three things. And then from then on, and I remember, I think I got a DX jersey the following year, and it was just like, through my teen years, everybody knew from then on I was wrestling. You get me something professional wrestling, and you've probably won my Christmas heart.
Now, I cannot tell you what I got. I think I got a lot of hockey tickets when I was a kid. I'm sure I got a bunch of wrestling stuff. Couldn't remember year to year, though. My memory is not that. I don't have the Will Washington memory. I was actually going to tag you in a tweet last night because that first hour, people are, I don't know if it's a complaint, but they're like, Will said this is going to be the shortest show ever, and he hasn't started on Dynamite. That's my fault. But that first hour, there was like no wrestling. Like there was one match, and then there was the six man, which went a decent hour or a decent time. And then the hook match was about 2 seconds. Was that the shortest amount of wrestling, the least amount of time of wrestling in an hour of Dynamite, Will? Oof. I feel like you should know this.
I mean, off the top of my head, like, I remember there was a show back in September where they had kind of multiple sports entertainment-y segments, and people had kind of pointed that out. And I know Tony had even kind of given me the stat directly, where Tony had told me that this was only the second show that he had done three in-ring segments that weren't matches. And this show had three, right? This show had...
Yeah, it started with Ricky, then it had Danielson, and then I guess you can count sort of Moxley. Yeah, but the other stuff
was I was going to say Swerve. That was...
Oh, yeah, Swerve, yeah.
So, yeah, this
I was thinking first hour only, sorry.
Yeah. No, this show did have three, though, just as a show. He usually does about two, and then the rest are all matches. So, I don't know. It's a little interesting. But anyway, I do just want to say, as far as Arduit is concerned and going to shows, I'm glad that you had fun at your first show. And yeah, there's really nothing like that first show. It's, you know, the problem I'm having, and I'm realizing what I need to do next year, and it'll probably start with San Francisco for Revolution, is having traveled a lot. And I'll let Jeremy take this call. But having traveled as much as I have traveled the last couple of years for pro wrestling, I've really been doing wrestling travel since about 2016. The part that I'm forgetting to do is enjoy the city that I'm in, get myself a little bit of an experience. And the reason I say all that is because arenas are kind of all the same. And it's like getting into a city and going straight to an arena. And hotels too. Hotels and arenas are kind of all the same, especially if you kind of like stick to a brand with your hotels. And so traveling for wrestling, you kind of find that if you don't do anything to experience the city.
I have to go.
All right. Peace.
I have to go do dad stuff.
You go Bye, do everybody. Dad stuff, and I'm going to keep doing dad stuff.
Bye, everybody. Love you, Will right Washington. Here. Bye, everyone.
Love you, Jeremy. Jeremy Lambert, everybody. Anyway. So, she's fallen over. So, yeah, all I was saying is if you're going to do any kind of wrestling travel, make sure you experience the city that you're in a little bit, because I went to New Orleans earlier this year for wrestling, and I kind of forgot to enjoy New Orleans. It was my first time in New Orleans, so, like, I forgot to really give myself a New Orleans experience. You know, after the show was over, you know, I saw a bunch of friends in wrestling, and we kind of got to do the Bourbon Street thing a little bit. But for the most part, I forgot to really give myself the New Orleans experience, and I got to remember to do that next time. And in 2023, a lot of my wrestling travel is I'm going to put a kind of pad it with a day on either side for just experiencing wherever I'm going. And Autoclave say just donated $8. Thank you. Always appreciate you. Let's see.
Have you guys seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt, staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looked more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix it with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike the other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade, has hundreds of 5-star reviews. I love the taste of this. I love the way that I feel after drinking it. I've never felt better. My digestion is smoother, body looks leaner, I have energy all day. I just feel younger. And the flavor is so much better than other green drinks. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/Fightful for up to 44% off your regular price order. Every purchase is packed with a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, boost of energy, and overall a healthier body, go to roundhouseprovisions.com/Fightful today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So Pablo here sent in a Humper chat, says, not sure when we're getting the Danielson MJF match, but if they wait till Revolution, I could see Brian winning it and then MJ getting it back a week or two later. What say you? I mean, I think Brian can't really, like, I would love to not see him lose another AEW world title match, because I think he'll end up setting a record for, like, most shots or most title matches without winning, right? Because he's had he had the first one with Hangman last year at Winter is Coming. He then had the rematch earlier this year. He's had the match with Moxley. To go for a fourth and not win the title, I think, would set Bryan up for... And I know he doesn't want it, but I would have concerns about that. So that's not a terrible idea. Pablo also says, Denver next week is my first time attending a show since WCW Thunder April 2000. Funny thing about that week, and it was, so WCW came to Denver in 2000, and that was the week that Bischoff and Russo kind of did the hard reboot on WCW. They stripped everybody of the titles. They debuted the new set, all of that stuff. They introduced the new blood. All of that happened Denver, Colorado. So I know what week you're talking about. He says, SRS was curious about the card, looked it up. It was Colorado Springs. So yeah, they were in Colorado Springs for Thunder. They did Nitro in Denver. He said, DDP versus Bam Bam, Sting versus Jeff Jarrett and Villanos. We had Flair versus Buff. Norman Smiley and Terry Funk teamed up. What a time. WCW 2000 is definitely a time. A good one that's up for debate, but a time nonetheless. All right, folks. You guys want to talk about some Dynamite? Let's talk about some Dynamite. And really quick, Graham B says, I wonder what Rebel and Paul Turner talk about. I don't know. Van Twinblade says, if you have Fight TV Plus, watch Glory Pro Show from Sunday, Tootie and Moses versus Suede and Mike Outlaw, Tornado Tag Match Humped. I'm glad you still got to watch it, Van Twinblade, because I know you didn't get to go this past Sunday. Caden says, Gun Club beating FTR ruined my Christmas. So the show opened up with one Ricky Starks, and if you were paying attention last week, you should have known where this was going. So Ricky Starks, basically, he owned not becoming AEW world champion, but talked about that he at least lost like a man, unlike MJF, who won like a coward. Good line there. He then talks about how that won't happen next time, because next time he will be the AEW world champion. He is then interrupted by Chris Jericho, which, like I said, Chris Jericho name dropped Ricky Starks last week. My gut told me that's where we were heading, that we were on our way next to Chris Jericho versus Ricky Starks. I feel like, to me, that's a good one for Ricky. I think that Ricky Starks needs to hold on to some of the momentum he gained winning the tournament and challenging MJF. And I think the best thing for Ricky Starks is for him to be facing somebody who's at the top of the card. That will keep Ricky Starks there. Nobody better for that than Chris Jericho. Yes, I know there's a little bit of a groan when somebody gets involved in a feud with Chris Jericho. Not because it's necessarily bad, because matches deliver with Chris Jericho. It's more so that people know when you get involved with Chris Jericho, getting out of a feud with Chris Jericho can take some time. It's somehow a miracle that Moxley only had the feud with Chris Jericho, like as far as his direct feud with Chris Jericho, Moxley really only had the build up to Revolution. And then we waited 2 years until they had the Quake by the Lake match. But for the most part, Moxley has managed to skip Jericho. That said, Jericho and Starks, like I said, I think it could be good. I thought Ricky Starks had some great insults for Chris Jericho. Jericho, of course, made the predictable offer to one Starks, offering him to join the Jericho Appreciation Society. Although, when you look at it at surface level, makes perfect sense, right? Ricky Starks does have some sports entertainment qualities about him. If anything, that's somebody you would think Chris Jericho would have been after for the Jericho Appreciation Society from like day one. And so Ricky, of course, turns it down. He throws some insults, some really great insults. He told Jericho that he's looking good because before he was built like an air fryer. That was a very good line. He said that he dresses like, what was it, a dad on his fourth marriage or something along those lines. It was great stuff. And he challenged Chris Jericho to a one-on-one match at the first Dynamite of 2023 in Seattle in 2 weeks. Great stuff. And then Ricky Starks gets jumped by, fifth divorce. Thank you, Ace Shock in the chat, who corrected me. But Ricky Starks gets jumped by Jake Hager and then the rest of the Inner Circle, or not Inner Circle, Jericho Appreciates the Society. Sorry, when I see Sammy Guevara there, I'm like, it's the same group. But the rest of the Jericho Appreciation Society jumps. He called them jazz holes. That line caught on. The crowd chanted jazz holes. That was actually kind of over. Again, I thought Ricky Starks was good here, and he held his own. The Jericho Appreciation Society jumps Ricky Starks. Out comes Action Andretti for the save. And they clear the ring. Later on, we saw Action Andretti cutting a promo. That was halfway decent. And he gets fire thrown in his face because, in case you forgot, Chris Jericho is a wizard. But we then had match five in the best of seven series. It'd be over here if that were the case. It would have been over a while ago. But in the best of seven series, we saw Death Triangle go up against the Elite. The Elite down 3-1. How could the Elite come back from this? No one's ever come back from a 3-1 deficit except for LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. If you didn't see this week's Road 2, or if you watch, what is the other show they do? Control Center. So great. Of course, we had Nick Jackson bringing up that the Cleveland Cavaliers and LeBron James did this. And with the most deadpan look, like I'm very much picturing them just busting out laughing as soon as it ends. But in the most deadpan way possible, Kenny Omega just goes, for those of you who don't follow sports, he's the guy who starred in Space Jam. Loved it. I thought, like, honestly, I still love Big Dork Energy Kenny. And that was great. But either way, this match was no disqualification. Everything's legal, including the hammer. Again, I have to just take a little umbrage with the people who thought that what the series was going to be was just a bunch of matches with no story. Because again, story is kind of what these matches are doing best. And thinking about how you don't necessarily need, I guess, you know, a bunch of in-ring promos and backstage segments and things along those lines to tell a story. You can tell the story solely with what's happening in the matches, and the matches themselves have been the story. And it's been great stuff. I've enjoyed pretty much every single one of them. I think maybe three was a little not so remarkable, but for the most part, these matches have been excellent. And match five just brought, again, something completely different to the table than match one did, than match two did, than what we saw last week. It's completely different. And this was a hoot. This was a blast. Nick Jackson, of course, selling the ankle injury from last week. We also saw some shenanigans involving Alex Abrahantes and Brandon Cutler. Brandon Cutler, of course, after getting the Cero Miedo thrown in his face, and he then sprays Alex Abrahantes with cold spray and then dabs and then gets super kicked. All of that was great stuff. I thought this was really exciting, action-packed. I wasn't sure that the crowd would really be entirely behind the Elite. There were some near falls in this match that had me convinced. It was one of those one, two, and then kind of convinced myself, okay, well, maybe we're not getting match six next week, because those Kenny getting hit in the head with the hammer and going down for the 1.9999999. Again, just an amazing near fall. Kenny getting the tinsel wrapped around his throat and by Pac and being locked in. And then as Nick Jackson goes for the save, Rey Fénix locks him in a bit of an ankle lock. And all of a sudden you're like, I mean, this could like be a match ender. Matt Jackson goes for the save and he initially gets stopped by Penta. I was biting on a lot of this stuff. And then of course, Matt Jackson breaks it all up and we end up getting a Meltzer driver off the top rope onto a chair, onto Rey Fénix. 1, 2, 3, the Elite win. And they do move on. Again, this like isn't true. It's not the John sends in the chat saying the best of seven has no story. That's not true. I mean, unless like, what's your definition of story? Because if your definition of story is having promos and backstage segments and things along those lines, sure. But that just means you're not watching the matches, because the matches themselves are the story. And it's been told through every single match that's taken place here. And the story has progressed each week. This has not been just straight matches. None of them have been the same. It has been a very, very interesting, fun, and unique series. And I have had a blast with it all the way through. And I am looking forward to match six. I'll be there in person. Go figure, because I was there for match one. And I'm excited for, honestly, match seven. Doing the ladder match, like, all of this should be exciting stuff. I mean, we got some exciting times coming up for one, Kenneth Omega. Because that man, you know, working these matches the way he's working. He worked dark this week. It was his first singles match in over a year. And then going over and facing Ospreay on January 4th. It's a great time to be a fan of Kenny Omega matches. And I, for one, am one of them. So I'm getting to the Rick Ross stuff. So hold tight.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Fight chat. Next we had Bryan Danielson, and he came out, and this segment was interesting because I don't think the crowd was giving Brian what he was after here. He got an HBK chant, which they were in San Antonio. That is HBK's hometown. He talked about training in San Antonio, and then he brought it back around to, even though he trained in San Antonio, even though he trained with Shawn Michaels, the guy who's been his biggest mentor and a person that he loved having in AEW these last few months has been William Regal. And I feel like the crowd was not giving Regal just the mention of Regal as much as I think the promo was calling for. And so I like the content here, but I didn't necessarily like the outcome of it. And I think Brian needed more of the audience to care about what happened to Regal. And I think that kind of goes to say what I've been saying the last few weeks and why I wasn't a fan of all the twists and turns with Regal, because I think you essentially detached people from it. Not to mention AEW fans are fairly astute when it comes to what's going on and are fairly aware that Regal left to go back to WWE. And so I think there's a feeling amongst AEW fans of fuck him. And so I think they just don't necessarily care about what happened to Regal from MJF. And I think they weren't giving Brian what he needed here. That said, person who did get a ton of heat here was Ethan Page, who came out with Stokely Hathaway. Stokely called Brian a raggedy bitch. He said, "You raggedy bitch." It was so good. And Stokely is hilarious, and more Stokely on my TV is something I will not complain about. Honestly, I saw somebody say it on Twitter. I think it was Anthony Scatz, and he said that, you know, honestly, the winning combination out of the firm is Ethan Page and Stokely Hathaway. I'm not necessarily, I agree with him, feeling Stokely with Big Bill or Stokely with the Ass Boys, but Stokely with Ethan Page has been great, especially considering how great Ethan Page has been here. Ethan Page garnered a ton of heat. Ethan Page is kind of showing a lot of the promise that he had when he initially signed with AEW and into the feud with Darby last summer. I thought there was a lot we got out of Ethan Page, and then he kind of got brought down by pretty much everything that went down with Dan Lambert and basically bringing in America Top Team. But we're starting to see a lot more of that promise. This segment had a really awkward ending, but I thought everything up until then with the challenge made for next week. Look, I get to see Bryan Danielson wrestle. I'm never going to complain about that. And he's wrestling Ethan Page. I think this should be really good. And one of those matches that I wouldn't have thought I would have ever seen. So, like, if you told me 2 years ago, yeah, you know, on a random episode of television, you're going to see Ethan Page and Bryan Danielson. And just thinking about the fact that Bryan Danielson was in WWE, Ethan Page was in Impact, and they're both going to be wrestling each other in AEW. That's such a cool thing. We saw Hook. That was a very quick match. Wrestled Exodus Prime. And then we had some backstage stuff. Moxley faced Darius Martin. This match gave Darius a chance to really showcase a little bit more and kind of have a... try to hold his own against Moxley. I think there's a little bit of confusion as far as the crowd is concerned. The crowd here was hot. And don't get me wrong, I thought that the crowd was hot, but wasn't necessarily giving the show what it was looking for in a lot of spaces. Like, I think Moxley is starting to confuse people a bit, because you have Moxley who is still star babyface of the company. I think it can even be argued he's still the top babyface in AEW. But I think the positions Moxley's been in, such as the way he's kind of mocking Hangman Adam Page, and Hangman Adam Page is, of course, a beloved babyface amongst AEW fans, and the way that he is put in a position to be an antagonist to Hangman Adam Page. The way Moxley on the mic this week, in his backstage segment, basically downplayed and almost made fun of Darius's injuries and car accident earlier this year. So we have that. And then also Moxley, he's just been You know, he was positioned against CM Punk back in September, who in Chicago. He was positioned against MJF in New Jersey just a few weeks ago. And it's really feeling to me like Moxley's being positioned in these matches. He was positioned against Takeshita as well, now that I think about it, just a couple weeks ago. He's being positioned in these matches to be kind of the heel, but he's still a top babyface, and he's still somebody that the fans, I think, want to cheer. He's just in a position to not. And in this match here, I think the fans were behind Moxley. He got a big pop when he came out, but he was positioned against Darius Martin, who was wrestling more of a Valiant type of match, and the fans weren't necessarily getting behind Darius Martin. And so I think that there was a little bit of confusion as to what this was supposed to be bringing to the table. I liked Darius here, though, and I want to see more of what he has to do. And I'm looking forward to the Battle Royal on Rampage this week. Should be a good stuff. So the and so sorry, Ace brought up, Will, you forgot what happened after the match was over. And yeah, talking about, I think he's referring to the Elite and Death Triangle match, which, yeah, that saw the Elite get bloodied by Death Triangle, which leads me to believe that next week is going to be a bloody affair in the Falls Count Anywhere match. Should be great stuff. A couple of, I guess, newsworthy notes that I will bring up here shortly. I realized when I should bring up those pieces of news. So, we then had FTR versus the Guns. No longer the Gun Club. There's just two of them. Can't have two people in a club. So, FTR and the Guns. Again, I told you last week that I thought the Guns were going to win here. And maybe some people were surprised by that. I think it's clear that that the Guns are not done with the Acclaimed, that never really had a payoff. The Acclaimed won the titles. And I know Caden was giving me shit last week for basically saying that it may not be a bad idea for the Guns to beat the Acclaimed. But I think that the Guns do have a story to tell with, you know, the Acclaimed essentially stole their dad and had some success with it. I think there is a story to tell for the Guns to be the guys who can prove that they're worth something without Billy as well. And I think there is a lot you can get out of that. Whether or not the Guns are your cup of tea, I don't know. But I do think that this, to me, was the right call for the story that's supposed to be told with FTR right now. FTR, of course, lost to the Acclaimed 2 weeks ago. And then they lost to the Briscoes immediately after. And now they've lost to the Guns. There's a story being told here that FTR might be losing it. And whether or not you believe the rumor that they're heading back to WWE or that they're kind of just fucking with people for a story, remains to be seen. But I think that regardless, there is a story being told that FTR can't seem to keep it together. Because the fact is, even though Austin Gunn took advantage and, of course, Colton held on to his arm as he made the pin, and that allowed him to pin Dax Harwood, fact is, no one really cost him the match. There was no interference. As it stands, FTR lost to the Acclaimed clean. They lost clean to the Briscoes, and they lost. And the thing was, Dax Harwood attempted to hold Austin Gunn's tights when he was pinning him, and Austin Gunn reversed it. So really, Dax lost at his own game. So the story being told here is FTR might not be as good as they think. And I kind of like that. It's interesting. And if it ends with them losing all of their titles, but ultimately winning the AEW World Tag Team titles once they regroup, I think there's some potential there. And finally, Hikaru Shida versus Jamie Hayter. This was everything I thought it was going to be. And I'm not even sure what I thought it was going to be. But Sheeta was hinting at, she's been saying for a long time, she's been wanting to do a, what she called a hard-hitting Japanese style match. And I think from opening bell, we got that. Sheeta made her way down to the ring. And Jamie Hayter had her first full-on one-on-one entrance as world champion. She presents like a champion. She carries herself like a champion. This, to me, really did feel like a main event match between two of the best that AEW has to offer in that division. This was the fifth time that women have closed out Dynamite. And specifically, I mean, women have had the main event match on Dynamite. If I remember correctly, the five, and I just posted this on Twitter, so it's not like I have to think too hard about it, but the five were, of course, Britt Baker versus Thunder Rosa from the first St. Patrick's Day Slam in March of 2021, and then Britt had the match with Ruby Soho at Grand Slam. That was the main event. And also, Britt, again, had a rematch with Thunder Rosa at St. Patrick's Day Slam in this very arena, Freeman Coliseum, for the title, where Thunder Rosa won the belt. And then a lot of people forget that Mercedes Martinez versus Deonna Purrazzo to unify the interim Ring of Honor Women's World Championship and the Ring of Honor and the lineal Ring of Honor Women's World Championship was the main event of that Dynamite in Baltimore. So this was the fifth time the Dynamite has closed with women total, third time this year, which is, if I remember correctly, also the same amount of main events that SmackDown's had. SmackDown, if I remember correctly, hasn't had, and again, this isn't to compare, it's just looking at the landscape of women's wrestling. So this isn't like a, well, they do this, they do that. It's just noting that it's happened. That SmackDown has had three women's main events this year. And I think all of them took place before, all three took place, I think, what? Because I remember Charlotte versus Naomi. That was a main event, and Ronda's had a couple. So, and I think they were all leading up to WrestleMania or leading up to Backlash. So either way, that's how that's gone. And don't worry, guys, I'm going to get to the segment to talk about getting this one out of the way. Hikaru Shida versus Britt Baker. Once again, it was a hard hitting match, and the really from jump, from opening bell, the blows they were trading and exchanging, it felt like a brawl. And I've wanted to see that out of Shida for a while. I think she was bringing a lot of that to the table, especially in the Serena Deeb matches. But hell, it's been a year since that feud really hit its peak. So I felt like we haven't really gotten that out of Shida this year. And I thought it just looked good. I thought Jamie looked good. Even in spots where the match looked rough, it looked like a... what's the word I'm looking for? It looked like wrestling. And that was really what I've wanted to see here. They also had the crowd in the palm of their hands. When the opening bell started, you could hear a lot of Jamie Hayter chants. But I think the fans remembered who Hikaru Shida was as this match went on. There were some Holy Shida chants. And next thing you know, as the match progressed, the crowd was just into it. I thought these ladies cooked. They were killing this main event. This was easily my favorite AEW women's match this year. And I think of those five main events that I named, I think this was the best one. And it's one of my favorite matches this year. I'll have to reevaluate as I look back at my matches of the year, as I talk about the match of the year stuff when me, Sean, and Denise do that show later. But this was great stuff. I thought they just killed it. We saw some interference toward the end of the match. Britt Baker tries to interfere on behalf of Jamie Hayter. Sheeta took her out. Jamie hit just a great looking powerbomb on Sheeta, and then just some great believable near falls right up until the point where, of course, Jamie wins with Haterade. Jamie celebrates, and then Jamie and Britt and Rebel jump Sheeta. Out comes Toni Storm. We actually haven't seen Toni Storm in quite some time, pretty much since Full Gear on screen. And then out, and they said on commentary that Tony's still not clear. And out came Saraya for the save, and the three standing tall at the end of the show were Sheeta, Saraya, and Hikaru Sheeta. I love this match. This, if I were still doing the ratings here, this is an S tier for me. I loved everything about this. I would love to see them lock up again. I'm really happy that Sheeta got this moment in the main event, considering that she was champion as long as she was and throughout that raid never got to close out a Dynamite. I'm really glad she got this spot, and it feels like Jamie Hayter is being cemented as a top dog. That this, it doesn't feel to me like a background player type of title reign here. That, yeah, they're telling the story that Britt has been trying to hijack her moments, but for the most part, Jamie feels like a top player in the division. And really, the division, I think, has been cooking a lot more. I want to see more stories play out throughout Dynamite, but for the most part, I'm happy with a lot of how the division is delivered in 2023. And you'd almost have to be kind of in denial of to not give them their credit on how the division is shaking out and shaping out. And if some things come through, I think it could only get better. And there's also returns along the way. We've heard that Thunder Rosa was backstage and that she's looking at probably returning February or March. That's a very good thing. Chris Statlander tweeted today that she's not cleared. And again, take your time, heal up. But just thinking about the fact that Red Velvet's back, and it's a good thing. It's a good thing for the division. You should want to see division succeed. I think I've been really happy with Raw's women's division, and I think seeing the women's division in AEW start to get a lot of what people have been asking for, it's a good thing. I have no complaints. By the way, I think Rampage has had 6 women's main events, maybe 7, but I think my gut says 6. I'm going to stick with 6 as an answer. And then, of course, there's been the 2 Battle of the Belts that had women's main events. We saw the first Battle of the Belts, which was Britt Baker versus Riho, and then also Nyla Rose versus Thunder Rosa for the title was also a main event. Anyway, let's talk about it, shall we, folks? As Orion Ben 666 says, okay, folks, it's time. Get your cinder blocks ready. This segment, we saw the introduction. And by the way, Ricardo says, best bout machine, Hikaru Sheeta. She really is. She's the ace of the division for a reason. But got to talk about Swerve and Our Glory having their face-to-face with the announced biggest boss, Rick Ross, being a part of this segment and being the mediator for Swerve and Keith Lee. Because, look, Rick Ross was excellent in his last appearance in AEW. I can see why they wanted him back. Rick Ross introduces Keith Lee. I am so glad you, a big motherfucker, has caught on the way it has, because what the hell? He just said it. And the look on Keith Lee's face was phenomenal. I laughed so hard when Keith Lee turned out of the ring and gave that kind of collar pull look. Beautiful. So Swerve makes his way out, sporting a logo that you may have been seeing him tweet about a lot lately. And we finally know what it was. We saw the Mogul Associates graphic. We now know that that's an M and an A. The Mogul Associates. What does that mean? And you may have noticed that one Swerve Strickland, for the first time, made his way out of the heel tunnel. Which means that for the first time, he is officially a heel. Even if he's been acting heelish pretty much going back to the Wednesday after All Out in Buffalo. Fact is, he is in full-on heel mode now. So that's where we can start with that. If you've been paying attention, you would have known that Parker Boudreau had tweeted about a month ago. I think it was November 28th. He had tweeted out the Mogul Associates logo. And that should have been the indicator. And he hasn't been with the Trustbusters in some time. That should have been the indicator that there was some kind of alliance between these guys. And so we saw Parker jump Keith Lee because Swerve told Keith Lee he needs to learn to have eyes in the back of his head. Rick Ross pointed at Keith at that point. Not sure what to think of all of that. I thought Rick Ross was going to be the one to jump him, which actually would have been kind of dope. But Parker Boudreau did. Parker is very much not for me. I don't quite get it. I'm still waiting for it. I didn't see any of Parker's stuff in NXT 2.0. I never watched any of that. So as far as being a professional wrestler is concerned, I don't know what Parker brings to the table. I know that he moves in a really goofy way, and that kind of bugs me. But I don't know. I don't truly know anything about what that man brings to the table. As far as afterward, we then saw, and granted, I don't know what his wrestling name is going to be, but we did see Grandin Goetzmann jump Keith Lee as well. Took people a while to figure out who that was because he doesn't really have a wrestling presence. He was a second-round pick for the Tampa Bay Rays in 2011. He played professional baseball all the way up until last year, and he's been training at Jay Lethal School. A lot of people have actually been talking him up, saying that he's actually got a lot to offer in the ring. I know Carly Bravo has been talking him up. So I don't have any judgments on him as a performer because I haven't seen anything. I know somebody said with all the tattoos, he looks like a doodle bear. And I can't unsee that now. But for the most part, I don't really have anything, any judgments on him as a performer. As far as the segment was concerned, I thought that the start of it worked. I thought, as far as like getting a chuckle out of me, because I like Rick Ross. I thought that the cinder block spot was actually really, really good. I thought, so they set up the cinder block on Keith Lee and Swerve hits a swerve stomp on it. He executed that. He hit the mark perfectly. I thought it actually looked like a gruesome attack. Where the segment kind of fell apart was one, I think I probably would have brought in Parker a little bit differently if it was going to be Parker. And Keith Lee kind of disposed of him. So he also didn't get to look all that great there. I think as far as Grandin is concerned, his attack, I think, came off a little bit better than Parker's did. But I think ultimately what brought it all down was Rick Ross on the mic here. I like Rick Ross. I thought, if you've seen the segment they posted to the AEW Twitter on social media, Rick Ross was excellent. I thought he actually came off better than kind of anybody as far as presenting the mission statement of Mogul Affiliates. I loved that stuff. But I thought in this segment, he kind of needed to just stop talking and let the moments soak in. And this is where I think he was dragging the segment down. And I think he didn't do the best job relaying the fact that he had also betrayed Keith Lee here. I think he needed... somebody kind of needed to inform him, okay, once the attack starts, just get off the microphone. Say what you need to say when it's over with, but as the attack is going on, let kind of the silence speak for itself. Or honestly, I would have had him be the one to hit Keith Lee. I think that would have been kind of cool. And then, like, if I were putting this segment together, when he was behind Keith Lee, I would have had him hit him, Keith Lee kind of look at him like, what the fuck did you do that for? And then have the other two come in, jump Keith Lee, and then do the cinder block spot. I would have put this together differently. As far as Swerve having a faction now, I think people are kind of looking at this because I've seen some comparisons to Hit Row, things along those lines. I think Hit Row was kind of more designed to be an all-encompassing faction, a group. This feels more like Swerve and his heaters. And in that sense, I don't know. I kind of dig the idea of him having essentially two white boys doing his dirty work for him. And again, I've kind of known where that part of it was heading. And that part of it, I like. The segment itself, though, I think was mostly a miss. And I think there would have been better ways to execute this. That's my feeling on it. But I think overall everybody's going to be fine. And I think that I think even having Rick Ross affiliated with him is actually a really cool thing. If you can get as much out of Rick Ross as you can without him necessarily being there every week, I think that would actually be really cool. And ultimately, I'm looking forward to Swerve having the singles run. I think him having the singles run with backup behind him is going to be kind of a cool thing. So yeah, Mogul Affiliates is a thing. People have been wanting my thoughts on it. I avoided saying a single thing about it on social media. I didn't tweet. I didn't say nothing. I kept it all for the very end of this show, and that's where we're at. We've got some super chats on the matter. Alan Mark says, it may be that I'm an old man, but I didn't like this Lee Swerve spot. It was badly planned and executed, and Rick Ross has go-away heat with me. I mean, hit or miss with you as far as Rick Ross is concerned. Like I said, I thought Ross was good in backstage segments. I think he's good. I thought he was good in the backstage segment last time, and I think he was good in the post-show segment they did on Twitter afterward. But with a live mic, I think there needed to be a little more production as far as that was concerned. We see Derek Gordon says, I honestly was liking this up until Parker popped up and I legit laughed out loud. The dude just doesn't have it. Again, something about Parker is definitely off to me and I can't figure out what it is. But again, I'm hoping that this is just a Swerve in his heaters kind of thing, because if so, I think that could work. Now, folks, let's talk about the ratings. How did this show do? Well, it's all in, and Dynamite did, on TBS, 957,000 viewers on average, which included 396 in 18 to 49, which was good for a 3.0 rating. Thank you, Brandon Thurston, for that. And from last week, that's up 1% in total viewership, but down in 18 to 49, 7%, because last week was 428,000. So that... It's kind of that. There's not much else to add to that. I guess overall, being up from last week is a good thing. Being down in 18-49. What's interesting is that they were up in 18-34, down in 35-49. So it's like they did a good job getting more young viewers, but in that same respect, turned off older viewers. But overall, the show still was up. So just depends on how you look at it. But either way, that's the show. I'm curious what the quarter hours look like. Those are not out yet. I could probably ask somebody in AEW for them like right now. But I will give that a wait. Until then, folks, this has been Day After Dynamite. Thank you for chilling with me for the last hour and a half. I said this was going to be a shorter one, and then it wasn't. But definitely join us in the next 20 minutes as I'm going to be with Righteous Reg and Philip Lindsay. We're going to be doing Ask Grapsody. Is this our last Ask Grapsody of 2023? It is. Join us for the last Ask or of 2022. Join us for the last Ask Grapsody of 2022. And then again, like I hinted at earlier, there's some cool stuff coming. Got some interviews coming up. We just did an interview with EJ Nduka of MLW. That should be up for Fightful Select Tier 2 subscribers now. And then you'll see it dropped on the regular Fightful feed later this week. We also have an interview with Veda Scott coming up here very soon. That one will drop first for Tier 2 subscribers. And then you'll see that one later. We've got a regular episode of Grapsody happening literally this Saturday. And also, finally, we have what else is coming up? Oh, yeah, the Fightful Awards, youtube.com/Fightful. It will be myself, Denise Salcedo, and Sean Ross Sapp. That's coming this January. Again, I've been putting this show together for the last, like, month and a half. Sean's been pumping those awards out. If you haven't voted yet, FightfulSelect.com, get your vote in. We're currently voting for Best In-Ring Women's Wrestler of the Year. We've voted on a lot of other categories already, now that I think about it. There's been votes on, if you haven't gotten your vote in, all the following categories are all up. We've got Men's Indie Wrestler of the Year, Women's Indie Wrestler of the Year, Booker of the Year, Manager of the Year, Best Gear Announcer, Storyline of the Year, Crossover Athlete. We've talked about Men's Singles Match of the Year, Women's Singles Match of the Year, Tag Match of the Year, the Women's Tag Match of the Year as well, Best on Promos, Feud of the Year, Promotion of the Year. There's a lot of stuff up there. Go through those categories. Get your vote in if you haven't already at FightfulSelect.com. And then we're going to announce the winners. We're going to do a big award show, Fightful, YouTube.com/Fightful. For myself, this has been Day After Dynamite. I will be back next week, last time for the year. And I figure the last show of the year, I should start out, or I should end Day After Dynamite for the year with the person that I started Day After Dynamite with. So, my guest next week is one Theron Reynolds, my old co-host from Now Playing Now back in the day, one of my best friends, my travel buddy, a guy that I've been across the globe with, been to wrestling shows with everywhere. And one more time, me and Theron are hosting Day After Dynamite next week. So until then, we'll see you next time. Have a great day. Peace.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.